John Clayton.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live at 710sports.com. On demand everywhere on the 710 Seattle Sports app. Now, John Clayton.
And good morning, everybody. Made it through another week as we got to Friday. Get to Washington State football tonight. Huskies on Saturday night going against Arizona State, a home game that's going to be very important for the team and one that they're heavily favored. So let's waste no time. Let's get into the five biggest stories of the day in the top five brought to you by Eastside Funding.
Number one.
Well, they've got a little bit of a new look about them. You know, and Elliott, you know, they're two big guns getting the ball more. Rod Marinelli's always been a good coach. Rashard's there now with them. Now Chris is there helping them out too. So they've got it's similar as they have been, but they're playing with a good tempo on their end of it. So it should be a really tough matchup for us, but a good one. I think the fans are going to love this matchup.
Yeah, Claude, you talk about pressure, and there's so much pressure in this game on the Seahawks. And I guess there's pressure certainly on the Dallas Cowboys because the Cowboys are 1-1, and they're trying to do their best job of trying to see where they are as a team. And so that's going to be the challenge. And I thought you can see Pete Carroll really studying the Cowboys, trying to pick out what he wants to see as far as what they do with the running game, because they are a team that's kind of expanded the running game, getting a little bit more back to where they were in 2016, a few more RPOs and all that. And the defense right now has, I think, been the big surprise. I think the big storyline is going to be the return of Chris Rashard. Chris Rashard comes back, and remember, he signed on to be the defensive assistant, you know, the main head assistant in charge of the secondary. Well, he's getting more because he's calling the plays. He is right now, you know, getting the defense a little bit more similar to what Seattle is, long, angular-type cornerbacks playing near the line of scrimmage. And so Marinelli, who's a cover two guy, is kind of going back to some roots when he was a cover one, cover three guy. And so that's going to go. And currently, the Cowboys rank ninth in second in sacks with 9, and they're 4th overall in defense, which is, again, a little bit of a surprise for how young they are. They're right now, the Cowboys are trying to kind of win the Seahawks as far as on offense. They're struggling on third downs. The Seahawks are currently 31st. They're converting only 23.8. The Cowboys are 23.8. You know, the Seahawks are 28%, so that's going to be one of the big ones. So the keys right now for the Seahawks, number one, to run the ball successfully. Number two, to maybe get some tempo going so they get some drives going in the first quarter, trying to test that defense, try to, you know, cover up for some offensive line injuries that they may have, try to make sure that Russell Wilson doesn't make the mistakes he's made in the first 2 weeks, and really, you know, settle in on the running game. I mean, settle in on who the running backs are. I mean, everything seemed to be so simple. And now Brian Schottenheimer took the blame yesterday for some of the miscues and all that stuff. And I know that at the beginning of the season, people wanted to run in the Cowboys, Scott Linehan out of town. Scott, a very imaginative play caller and a very good play caller, guy that I like a lot. So you can see there's a lot of pressure on all these coaches. Brian Schottenheimer, certainly there's a lot of pressure on Scott Linehan. And so we'll follow how that's going to go. Important game for the Seahawks. They need to win. Of course, the Cowboys can say the same thing.
Number two.
That's crazy. Coming to a brand new program, and 3-4 days later, you're playing football on Monday night. That's a lot to even, you know, you think my job is hard. That's hard, you know, but he pulled it off and did a very good job and had an impact in the game, too, you know. It's going to be interesting to see how this turns out, you know, when KJ's back. Bobby's back this week, and KJ has a chance to make it back next week, and we'll see what happens. But in the meantime, we're very fortunate to have him join our team, and we're going to see him through, you know, his concerns and issues that he's got to deal with, and try to help him through it as much as possible, and see what it all means when all the information comes down.
So the injury report, not good. I mean, you can see, and we'll find out later on this afternoon after 1 o'clock how bad it really is. But Ethan Posick did not practice with an ankle. Justin Britt did not practice with a shoulder, and I know that Jake Heaps had been kind of reporting that Britt's definitely going to miss some time, not just this week, maybe another week. We'll see how that goes. Posick, it may be a game time decision, but if he doesn't practice today, I think we know what that decision is going to be. So what do you do as far as patching up the line? It's pretty simple. Joey Hunt takes over at center. J.R. Sweezy takes over at left guard. D.J. Fluker takes over at the spot at right guard. So that's going to be that. And it doesn't look like K.J. Wright's going to be able to play, but they're okay because Michael Kendricks is going to play, although he's on the injury report with an ankle injury. He was limited. Deion Jordan on the injury report, limited with a knee. You figure so far He's played 14 or 15 plays. We don't know if there's going to be any increase in the pitch count there. As far as other injuries, DJ Fluker, Russell Wilson, Trey Flowers, Delano Hill, Bobby Wagner, and Earl Thomas, all full participants. As far as the Cowboys, this is going to be interesting because I know that they're going to list Sean Lee as questionable with a hamstring injury. Looks like that's going to be a game-time decision. He thinks he's going to be able to play, but he's the key to their defense. Also, looks like Xavier Woods, the safety, maybe Cole Beasley, the wide receiver. They're going to be game-time decisions. I know Malik Collins is really doing a little bit. I don't know if he's going to be able to play. Travis Frederick, the center, is going to be out. That means he's replaced by Joe Looney.
Number three.
Cougs in L.A. tonight. They'll take on the 1-2 USC Trojans, 7:30 on ESPN. You can also hear it on our sister station, 770 KTTH. I said it earlier, and I really believe this. Cougs have a great opportunity in front of them. If the Seahawks and Huskies are dealing with significant pressure this weekend, the Cougs have opportunity.
And the opportunity is to go down to a USC team that doesn't seem like most USC teams. I mean, how many USC teams start out 1-2, and they've gone with a great one, a great freshman quarterback, but what you're seeing is that that's a freshman quarterback. He has one touchdown, three interceptions, and you know they struggled, and of course, last week they lost to Texas 37-14. As far as UW, Gardner Minshew, of course, off to a good start with 1,203 yards in four games, eight touchdowns, and he's thrown to 13 different players on the team. So you can see that they're going to, and really, that's something you can expect because from what I understand, Mike Leach thinks he has the deepest group of wide receivers he's ever had, and certainly the defense has been pretty good. The running game with James Williams off to a good start, 137 yards. They've also got receptions out there with 121 yards of receptions for James Williams. So the Cougars have a chance, an opportunity to see how they can do an upset USC. You know, normally it would be a struggle to get them on a home game and beat them, but can they beat them on the road? Hey, we'll see.
Number four.
And with great pride, I say the Browns are in victory formation. Baker Mayfield takes a knee. Count it down, everybody. The Browns are winners tonight. And the drought is over. Led by the number one overall draft choice, Baker Mayfield.
Well, what a great story because, again, the Browns looked like the Browns in the first half because here they were. You knew they had an advantage. They had Greg Williams and a pretty good defense. Greg Williams, a defensive coordinator. And so I thought that they were going to win because my issue was that as much as I think Sam Darnold was the best quarterback in this draft, I knew that it was going to be tough for him to have three games in 11 days and do well in this third game, even do well in the second game. And you see he's dropped off in games two and three. So they weren't going to score many points. And so all it came down to was the Browns getting off to a good start. And they didn't. Tyrod Taylor had 4 for 14, 19 yards, and then suffered his third concussion in a year. And out comes Baker Mayfield. Baker Mayfield was phenomenal. Again, I don't know ultimately if they're going to go back to him as a starter. That's a debate. With the injury to Taylor, yeah, maybe they will. But 17 to 23, he basically worked short passes in the middle of the field, got a two-point conversion pass that he caught from Jarvis Landry on the Philly special that they didn't want to call the Philly special, got 98 yards rushing from Carlos Hyde, a good performance. And so now everybody's around town going to Bud Light coolers and grabbing free beer because the Browns get their first victory since 2016. And that's a win 21-17. I know Mike Salk didn't believe this, but I know last night with Denny, Dave, and Moore, and with Jim Moore, I was actually saying as much as I beat up on the Browns that they were going to win last night. They came through, and it was an exciting game because Baker Mayfield did do some excitement. Now we'll see if he's going to get the starting job.
Number five.
I don't think you could increase the chances that we would want to. the chances that we would want to are already very high. But, you know, we have to get to the end of the season, measure where our roster is, how all the pieces fit, and then engage Nelson in regard to his interest level, because that's part of this too. It is a two-way street, and my expectation is that we'll have those conversations at the appropriate time. But everybody wants Nelson here. There's no question about that.
So that's going to be the big debate now is Jerry DePoto on Danny, Dave, and Moore talking about will they or will they not get back Nelson Cruz. It's their decision. He's completing a four-year, $57 million deal, and my guess is he'll get a deal that if he does sign, that'll be 2 years, 28, something like that, maybe 14, maybe at the most $15 million a year. But that's going to be a debate. I mean, is that what you want? I mean, he is aging, but still he's been probably the best free agent signing this team has ever had, or one of the best, and certainly one of the best hitters, and he's so good in this ballpark. ballpark. I think it's one that they really should do, but so far they've not approached him, according to the Seattle Times, on talking extension, and I think Nelson understands that. They'll make that decision after the season, so they got to see where they are. And right now, I mean, they're on the verge of getting eliminated from the wild card race. They have had 84 wins, probably projecting out in the end to maybe get about 88 or 89 wins, which of course is much better than anybody anticipated, but not good enough to get into the playoffs. So Nelson Cruz in, Nelson Cruz out. We'll see how that goes. Hey, you can listen to my show on the 710 Sports app. It's driven by your Puget Sound Acura dealers. Well, coming up next, we're going to get into Brian Schottenheimer. Brian Schottenheimer right now, you know, being criticized, I guess, in town, much like we saw for years with Daryl Bevel. If you're the offensive coordinator and things aren't going, is it fair to criticize him or not? We'll get into that under further review. It's the John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
Under further review with John Clayton.
We'll review the play.
Well, under further review, of course, is going to be Brian Schottenheimer. I know that he talked yesterday, and the offense, I mean, he knows it's got to be better. I mean, the plan was to have one voice, and one voice being Brian Schottenheimer, making sure that you know, Russell Wilson does the right things, that they run the ball more, and none of that pretty much has worked so far. I mean, the offense is among the worst in football. They're among the worst running teams. They've only had 38 running plays in two games. They're one of the worst teams in the league on third down because they get so many bad third down opportunities. So all those things are working against Brian Schottenheimer, and he's got to fix this. And I know yesterday he says that you know, he identified what the problems are, and he can't fix them, and but he was also, he says he needs to be better.
I go back to me. I need to be better. I'll do a better job, working hard on it, and again, excited to play Dallas this weekend. If I was standing up there, or we as a staff are looking and saying, hey, you know, we really don't know what the issues are, we're just struggling, that's not the case. We know what we need to clean up. We've been emphasizing that. We started last week with red zone, and we, you know, did a nice job in the red zone last week, so I think we'll find our rhythm again this week. But we know we need to be better. Nobody likes sitting here at 0-2, and we're competing to do that.
So that's the plan right now, and you know, he identifies what needs to be done, but it has to be done, and against a defense that I think that is surprisingly better than people think. A defense that has a lot of young players. They've gotten good play out of their front seven. The secondary now has been kind of revamped by Chris Richard, and you know they're going to try to do that. And of course, I mean, nobody knows this offense better than Chris Richard because he's gone against it, you know, every day in practice for how many years and trying to scheme it. So that's going to be a very competitive thing, but also from that standpoint, knowing that Chris Richard is calling the plays, you know, Russell Wilson and the team knows what, at least the players that have been coming back in this team, and not the four out of the five wide receivers or the new tight ends or anything like that. You know, they do have an idea of what needs to be done against Chris Richard. So that's going to be it. So now, what are going to be some of the things that do need to be changed? I think the first thing is, and this is just my read on it, hey, you come out and you just try to run the ball at the start. You have to, if you don't get a good running play on the first one, then you try a quick pass. Then you try to get some things going so you get the moving of the chains and you get the crowd there behind. Because, I mean, you've seen so much over the last 2 years, particularly last year, you know, the crowd kind of goes silent with those silent first quarters, and they just can't have the silent first quarter. They have to get off to a good start. It is a must. And then the other thing, after they do that, I think that what they must do is try to get a tempo going, an up-tempo type of offense to try to, you know, tire out. Of course, you know, it's a young defense, so it's not going to be easy to tire out a young defense. That's not going to be the case. But what I think the plan has to be is put more on tempo, more on maybe doing some more running plays, you know, do more running plays even with Russell Wilson, even though I think there's a reluctance to try to do that. I mean, because again, you know Russell needs to be healthy enough by the fourth quarter to do the running plays to take control of the game. And, you know, but I think that he needs to take control earlier to make it easier. They need to stick with the same running backs. They can't keep rotating, I think, like they have. I mean, the rotation in that Monday night game totally confused me, because here was Chris Carson off to a good start running the football, And then, you know, Pete Carroll thought he was gassed for special teams, and he wasn't. And so he just sat there, and he didn't get a chance to play much. Then you get, you know, Rashad Penny, who was encouraging. I mean, he did some pretty good things, but also as a young back, he's going to make some mistakes, be in position sometimes not to be there for the right pass. And then C.J. Procise was virtually invisible for some time, and at different times you never saw him on the third down. Go back into the rules it's supposed to be. It's supposed to be Chris Carson as a starter, Rashad Penny is the backup, C.J. Procise as the third down, passing down type of back, and do that. So I know that earlier Brock Huert was talking about what needs to be coming from Russell Wilson, and one of the things that he can say is, okay, run pass option. But as he notes, it's not that easy to do.
Where's the play action game been?
Yeah, that's been equally
Isn't
disappointing.
Isn't that what Russell's good at?
That's what he's really good at.
What's
going
on with Brian Schottenheimer?
The numbers don't lie. 5 of 6, week number one, QB passer ratings like 50 points higher on play action pass, but not nearly enough, you know, just with the run game as well, and tying those two things together. I think from a play caller standpoint, and from Brian's, he would say to you guys, oh, that's great. Like John Schneider wants linemen, and he's just going to pull them off the lineman tree in the backyard. Oh, you want play action. That's great. Do you know who's, you know, running down the right side here? You know who's crashing in these edges? A guy named Khalil Mack and Von Miller. And do you want me to fake a handoff and have those guys ear hole Russell? Right? Is that what you, oh, you think it's just so easy here to just, you know, get outside the pocket all the time? No, it's not easy. Just like running the football in the NFL is not easy. Did you watch your Thursday night game last night? There's a lot of hard yards, man. It is violent. And you've got to be committed to it. And both those teams were. Both the Jets and the Browns with young quarterbacks were pretty darn committed to it, even when it wasn't pretty. But it sure played a role. Carlos Hyde punched 2 touchdowns in running. Mm. Right, were able to control the ball and shorten the game and play to the physical nature that those teams want to. And they don't even want to play at your nature. So that run play action will be certainly under the microscope.
Sorry. And it will be, and I think that they'll try to do it. But again, I think Brock brings up a good point. It's not easy to do, and I think one thing that people are forgetting, they played 2 pretty good defenses to start the season. Denver's pretty good. I think that you can see the Chicago Bears with the 5 first-round picks and Khalil Mack, very good. You know, top 10 defense last year. And so that naturally is going to create some problems for you because you're going against good defenses. And so far, I know that this is going to be a good test for where they are with the defense of the Dallas Cowboys, but they're off to a pretty good start. We'll see where they're going to be. So, you know, if you're going against a good defense, you may not be necessarily going that great on offense. But if you're Brian Schottenheimer, you've got to find a way to start winning and then, you know, winning the fans. Because I think that you can see he did a good job of winning the media. I think he's done a good job of, you know, winning so far on the team, you know, getting the team believing in him. Russell Wilson believes in him, but that's nice, but an 0-3 start is going to checker that belief pattern and get them in a tougher spot to try to turn this thing around. And so now, you know, it's up to Brian. And again, as I've said now for several weeks, until the defense had a good game, they were encouraging. They got some positive things going, but in the end, it's going to be up to the offense to help carry the defense until the defense gets into a groove, gets healthy, all those different things, and gets everything going in the right direction. So that's going to come down to the offense, and it's going to come down to Brian Schottenheimer. So I guess you could probably say this is a pivotal game for him. I mean, next week, of course, you know, they can anticipate doing good things against the Arizona Cardinals because the Cardinals have struggled so much and right now are not a very good football team. But, you know, this is one where you win this, you can get back, you can be 2-2 by next week if you can win, but you got to win this week. You don't want to be 0-3. That's the one thing that I think you really have to fear, because if you're going to be 0-3, then you're really going to be in trouble. I mean, you've got to find a way to get this, and that's where it's going to be a lot of pressure on Brian Schottenheimer. Again, you know, Brian, and it's funny because, you know, Brian took the initial criticism nationwide. Oh, yeah, you're old school. All you want to do is run the ball. And so far, he's only had 38 running plays. They've passed it. They've tried more long passes. And Brock brought up the idea of the play-action pass. Well, hey, listen, you're not going to have play-action pass if you can't establish the run. Two things don't happen, and you've seen it in this team. I mean, if you can't establish the run. If you don't establish it, you're not going to be good in the red zone because you need to run the ball in the red zone to be good. Just go ask the Detroit Lions. Go ask some other teams. Go ask Seattle. You've got to run the ball and do some good running. running plays near in the red zone. And then if you can run the ball, then you can set up the play action pass. And you know that Russell Wilson's one of the better play action passers in football. But it has to be set up by the running plays. It has to be set up by good play calling. So the pressure's on Brian Schottenheimer. He's taken the blame for some of this stuff. But right now, he's got to fix it and fix it fast. Hey, you can check out the show in the 710 Sports app. It's driven by your Puget Sound Acura dealer. Coming up next, chance to catch up with Shaquille Griffin, who's off to a great stop at cornerback. It's the John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
John Clayton.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On demand with the 710 Seattle Sports app.
Right now, Shaquille Griffin, can you talk about the comfort level you've been able to carry over? Because you had a great rookie season, but it looks you so much more comfortable right now, even though you're switching on the other side of the field.
I just feel like I know what's going on. I know what to expect, and I feel like that's where the confidence came from. You know, I feel like I did fairly good last year in my rookie season, but I feel like I was learning. You know, now I feel like that I know a little bit. Now I can kind of start putting the things that I learned into play and, you know, and put them into a different situation. So I feel a lot more comfortable, you know, being on the field and, you know, and being able to take that leadership role and help other guys. So, you know, being able to do that, I feel so much confident, you know, while I'm out there playing.
I mean, do you start to get the mindset of what, like, Richard had when he was over there on your side? Just, you know, because obviously he was able to match everything step for step and everything else, but his mind game and be able to figure things out on the run. Is that what you're picking up?
Oh, yeah, most definitely. And I feel like the stuff that Richard Sherman used to do, I'm starting to pick up on, you know, seeing, you know, plays a little earlier, you know, expecting, you know, different things that I seen earlier on film, you know, and now I'm starting to see it before it actually happened. And that's the best thing that could, you know, ever happen. You know, you want to start to have a feel for something that's going to happen or could happen, you know, and that's the main thing I want to learn. But now, you know, the more I play, the more, you know, it's easier for me to actually see, you know, and understand what could actually happen next. So that, I feel like that's the main reason why I'm so confident, because now everything is slowing down. As not this year.
Well, and it's so noticeable, too, because, again, it's like, I mean, you can just see as the season was going on, you got that comfort level, mm-hmm. and you started out so well being able to cover things deep and match mm-hmm. up and all that stuff. But now it's like the game's coming to you, and you know what to do.
Oh, yeah, and then that's exactly what's been happening. So, you know, last year as I progressed, you know, just covering deep ball, and now coming into this year actually grabbing it. So that's a total, you know, a total turnaround from last year, and now I'm finally glad it's happening, and I'm putting into play, and I'm having a lot more fun. You know, once you're comfortable, now you can enjoy it a lot more because you know what's going on, and it's cool to actually have that feeling when you're on the field.
Yeah, but the only, you know, it was one bad part about it, because then all of a sudden, if you keep doing what you're doing, then you start to get Richard Sherman in the sense that nobody throws in your side, and you have to go through and not get many passes on that side.
Well, that's not the worst thing.
no interceptions.
Yeah,
you don't
get. I know that'd be the tough part, but. You know, it'd be cool, you know, when people start, you know, being afraid to throw on my side, because then now I'm getting a sense of respect. And that's always cool to have that type of respect, you know, in this league, you know, at the highest level. But, yeah, I would be kind of sad if I stopped getting the ball thrown to me because, yeah, like you said, there'd be less picks. And that just helped me to take advantage of all the opportunities I do get, you know, and that's something I look forward to, just taking care of all the opportunities that I do have.
Because I know from what you said after the game, that meant a lot to you to get the two interceptions, because you waited till 17 weeks to get the first one last year. 17 long weeks to get the first one. Now you get two in like about 3 minutes.
Yeah, and then, yeah, I waited a long time. And I told them last year, I said, all I need is one. I went through the whole year. So all I need is one. All I need is one. Once I get one, everything's going to fall into place. It's going to happen. And then I finally get one in the last game of the season. So, but I'm glad I carried over. So, you know, I got that one last year, and now it's starting to trickle over to this year. And hopefully, you know, they say it come in bunches, so hopefully I can continue, you know, that progress in that road and continue to grab the ball.
Now, when you watch the film, when I'm looking at Trey Flowers, mm-hmm. I'm seeing the same thing I saw early from you last year, because in the preseason he was so good at, you know, covering the deep stuff and all that. Then he had to work on the underneath stuff, which he's working on right now, but he seems to be modeling what you did last year.
I feel like the best thing he's doing is listening. You know, I feel like that's the main thing I did last year. All I had to do was listen. You know, guys were telling me what I could work on, what I should do, and I did it. And he's doing the same thing, and that's one of the players who I got really close with since he's been here. You know, and that's who I hang with a lot, and he's taking all the advice he can get, and he's starting starting to trickle into his own game, you know, and using his own way. So that's all he had to do was listen, and he's doing well with that. And that's all I did last year, and it made my year a lot more easier. So he's going to continue to pick up on things. And I feel like the more he played, the more he progressed, he's going to learn so much more, just like I did last year.
Yeah. Well, it's funny because, I mean, when you look at the start for the defense, particularly in the secondary, because obviously there's a lot of turnover and a lot of change, but it's like Pro Football Focus had Earl Thomas as the best safety in the first two games. It had Bradley McDougal as the third best safety. You know what the starts you're having. Justin Coleman's had two passes completed on him in two games. And so it's like, it's not a bad start when you start to look at it.
Oh, yeah, definitely not. And we're only going to get better from here. This is just the beginning. So that's the good part about it. You know, everybody is starting to get the feel for how they want to be this year. And everybody is going and getting into their own little phase, and that's good. So you're only going to pick up from here. This is just the beginning of it.
So now, if you got into the phase like Richard where they're just not going to throw the fade pass at you, or are they going to give you the opportunity to do like Richard and grab those fade passes?
I'm hoping to give me an opportunity. I'm not sure what will happen. I'm curious how this game will go, but I'm hoping they, you know, continue to try me. You know, that's something I look forward to. I love competing, and, you know, I want the ball. So hopefully the quarterbacks continue to try me. You know, and I don't take no disrespect in that. I'm just ready to get the ball, so I'm ready to compete with some good receivers.
So now you're getting more into the communication of that, because I know you're helping out your brother in week one and all that stuff. I mean, to do that in the second year, that's pretty advanced.
Oh, yeah. Well, I took a lot from last year, and the one thing I do, I feel like I pick up on things pretty fast, and I feel like that's the good part of, you know, my game is, you know, I can pick up on things fast and use the things I do need and put away the things I don't. So, you know, some people just take in everything, but sometimes it doesn't work. And I feel like I know the difference for the things that I do need and don't. So it helps me to understand what I want and how fast I need to pick up on things, and it just helps me, helps my game.
So what's the biggest thing that you think you've improved on?
Get my head around. You know, last year I felt like I was just focused on just punching the ball out, being safe, making sure, okay, if I go for it, if I miss, he might catch it. I don't think like that anymore. Now I think about it, the ball is in the air, it's mine. So I feel like I changed my mentality the way I think when the ball is actually in the air. You know, last year I was like, you know what, let's play it safe, knock the ball down, live for another down. You know, and now I just feel like the ball is in the air, it's mine. I'm not giving nobody else's mind, so the mentality that I have when the ball's in the air is totally different. And I feel like that's what I changed, and now you see me, I'm getting my head around, I'm looking for it, so that's all I need to do. And I feel comfortable doing it.
Chrissy, the other thing too is like, how are you getting the feel for the respect that you're starting to get from opponents?
Oh, that always feels good. to have respect from opponents, and you know, each game I have the receivers come up to me, and you know, and you speak to some guys who are pro bowlers who've been playing for, you know, 8-9 years, and it's like, man, I got so much respect for you, man. Your game is awesome, you're only gonna get better, and you know, that give you another sense of confidence, you know, and it feels good to have that, you know, and hopefully I continue to gain more respect from each receiver and each team I play against and coaches. So, you know, that's always a good thing to be respected in the league.
Yeah, and of course, I mean, that's the one thing that's kind of fun because, again, this is now a younger secondary, but also the return of Earl Thomas had to be huge.
Oh, yeah, of course, you know, we're happy to have him, you know, and you can see he make a huge difference when he's here. You can see it. And he's pick off right where he left off. And, you know, and we're all buying into it. And he's leading us the right way, and we're just glad to have him back.
I mean, what does he do finally as far as just as a free safety to get the right positioning for everybody?
He just leads the right way. He makes the calls. He made the right communication, and he does his job the correct way. You know, he's not out of place, and he's making sure everybody right. And that's the leader you want in that secondary. So it's always good to have him back.
Thanks. Congratulations.
So that's Shaquille Griffin, who really, you can hear in his voice how much more confident he is. You know, last year, as he said, he listened, and he listened very intently to what was taught to him by all the guys, Earl Thomas, particularly Richard Sherman and that, and he executed. And now this year, he's turning it around and trying to help out, trying to make it a little bit easier for some of these other guys to be able to make their adjustments to Trey Flowers and that. And I think you can see it's starting to become a pretty good group. And so tell me what you think about this, Maura. All right, so now Earl Thomas has come back and has played, at least according to Pro Football Focus, best safety in football. Bradley McDougal has been the third best safety in football, according to Pro Football Focus. You know, Shaquille Griffin right now has done good. He's had 8 passes completed on him in 2 games. Justin Coleman, depending on which site you want to look at, has either had 2 passes completed on him in 2 games or 1. And so what you're looking at is that's 4/5 of a pretty good secondary, and now it's a matter that Trey Flowers comes back. He had 72 plays in the first game and looked pretty good. Looked to me very much like Shaquille Griffin last year at the beginning of the season. And, you know, they got good play certainly out of some of the other guys who have filled in. You know, I thought Akeem King did a good job against the Chicago Bears. That's not a bad secondary when you look at talent-wise.
No, not at all. And I think that's what's been keeping them hanging in there, even though they've had all these injuries and had to move around so many different positions and start guys that they did not expect to start. And that's why I think if you can get Bobby and KJ out there healthy together, that one of the best linebacking duos in the league, that that combined with a secondary that's doing pretty well could help so much in maybe generating a little bit more of a pass rush, being able to blitz Bobby and KJ. Because right now, Frank Clark's really the only one getting pressure.
No, I agree. And I think that, you know, that's going to be one where, you know, you try to worry about just being in position to make the right plays. That is going to be one of the keys. But then the second part of it is, I mean, then you want to try to be able to get that extra pressure when needed. And, you know, they need to get it, you know, directly from the start. I mean, get it from the, you know, the guys up front, and they need that. That's why, you know, they're still struggling on the defensive end to see who's in and who's out and all that stuff. But in the big picture, I think that you can see there's enough talent there to be able to get this thing going. It's just going to take time. I mean, you know, what can you expect when you have a first-time starting middle linebacker in Austin Calitro, and then you get, you know, Michael Kendricks, who did a yeoman's job and was able to play so well last week with maybe only two practices. Now he gets to start probably again. And then probably by next week in Arizona, they get KJ right back, and then they also get the return, or they get Bobby Wagner back. And so, yeah, things can get better, but, you know, they need the offense to be able to help them through this. Hey, coming back, we're going to get into the injuries, catch you up to date what's going on in the National Football League. It's the John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to The Professor, John Clayton.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
And so we go behind the lines at 10:45 each day with a busy Friday. Lots to catch up on. And, you know, we'll get you all the rumors and what's happening around the National Football League. Interesting story out of the Post-Gazette in Pittsburgh. You know, they're talking about Le'Veon Bell, who's going to miss his third consecutive game, holding out. And now, according to Ed Bouchette, who's I've known for so many years, there's some thoughts that maybe Le'Veon Bell might hold out the entire season. Now, you figure at the very worst, he'd come back for the final six games to get his contract told, get a few page checks and all that stuff. But apparently now he's so concerned about, you know, next year and free agency, which of course he would blow by missing the entire season. And secondly, I guess he's affected by the Ryan Shazier neck injury, worried that something bad could happen to him. But crazy, crazy story that, you know, this thing can be longer than a 10-game holdout. We'll see exactly where it's going to go. But very, very strange is what's going on with Le'Veon Bell with the Pittsburgh Steelers. Very strange what's going on overall with the Pittsburgh Steelers, a team right now that, you know, has all kind of things going crazy. Now, as far as injuries, well, I'll tell you what, one of the worst teams is going to be the Indianapolis Colts, because they have six players already ruled out. D'Amico Autry, the defensive lineman, Anthony Costanzo, the left tackle, Jack Doyle, their tight end, Marlon Mack, and if you remember Mack, the starting running back, he originally got hurt with a hamstring injury in the Seahawks game. Defensive lineman Hassan Ridgeway, and then Quincy Wilson. All those guys been ruled out for the Indianapolis Colts. They are going to be in deep, deep trouble. And, you know, they got off the win, nice win over the Washington Redskins. That was encouraging. But, boy, to be out six starters, and, of course, if you're Andrew Luck, and once again, you don't have your left tackle, you don't have, you know, your tight end. I mean, they do have T.Y. Hilton. He is going to be able to play, but this team really going to be in bad shape as far as injuries. Six guys scratched because of injuries. I mean, you know, on the Monday night game, the Seahawks had six guys, five of them starters scratched. Very similar thing right now for the Cowboys, or for the Colts, and that's not necessarily, that's pretty bad. They are going to be in bad shape. Elsewhere around the National Football League, kind of giving you the injury report of what's going to happen, Minnesota. According to Mike Zimmer, no Dalvin Cook because he has a hamstring injury, so they'll have to go with you know, their backup running back, Latavius Murray. Defensive end Everson Griffin is going to be scratched from the game, so he's going to be out. Larry Fitzgerald has a hamstring injury, but he had full practice yesterday, so it looks like he's going to be in the mix. The Cincinnati Bengals are going to be down two on offense. Joe Mixon, the running back, with a knee injury. Billy Price with a foot injury. Not that he's been officially ruled out, but it doesn't look good for him to be able to play. Still in concussion protocol for the Carolina Panthers, Trey Turner, the Pro Bowl caliber guard, he's in concussion, and so that's bad for the Cowboys. As I mentioned earlier, they're trying to see if they're going to get Malik Collins and Sean Lee and Xavier Woods back. They're still not sure about that. In Baltimore, it looks like Alex Collins is going to be able to play, just has a little bit of an illness. More injury stuff for Kevin King, the former Washington cornerback from the Huskies. He's got a groin injury, not expected to play. Naturally, the expectation is Aaron Rodgers is going to be able to play in Philadelphia. It's going to be a game time decision on Jay Ajayi. Doesn't look good right now for Darren Sproles with his hamstring injury. Joey Bosa has already been officially ruled out by the Los Angeles Chargers. As far as Atlanta, you know, Devontae Freeman is going to miss the game. They're already down three starters from the first couple weeks of the season. They're not in good shape. Jadeveon Clowney has that back injury. It looks like as though he's going to be able to play. Game time decision on Rashad Jones. He's got a shoulder injury. He's the only player in question for the Miami Dolphins. Eric Berry doesn't look good for him to be able to play with his heel problem. Five questionables for Jacksonville, including their top two running backs. Leonard Fournette with a hamstring. I think he's going to be able to go. T.Y. Yeldon with an ankle. He's out. They added two cornerbacks, D.J. Hayden with a toe, Jalen Ramsey with an ankle. They should be able to go. Questionable right now for A.J. Can, their guard. He's got a tricep injury, and he doesn't know if he's going to be able to go. Doesn't look good for Darius Slay to be able to play with a concussion. And here's an interesting note out of the Green Bay Packers. Clay Matthews, now remember, he had the penalty, and they now have used the Clay Matthews play, the Eddie Kendricks play, you know, for burping the quarterback, as they call it, burping the quarterback, which is grabbing the quarterback around the back and trying to put him on the ground, not necessarily violently, but putting him on the ground and while you're in the air. Well, apparently, he didn't get fined. Now, Mara, explain this. If you have now added burping penalties or penalties for, what, bend and toss or whatever you want to call it, reach and grab or whatever, call it what you want. They've now added that to the list, and now he doesn't get a fine, even though that play cost him the game.
I cannot explain that to you, Professor. It makes no sense at all.
I mean, it's like, you got to be kidding me. What's the thinking and what's the rationale in that? I mean, you know, here you take, you get this call. It's bad. Everybody recognizes it's bad. And then you double down and you say, oh, okay, well, we're now going to add that to the list. And, and so they're going to do that. And so
what Andrew Sandejo said the other day?
No.
He was on KFAN in Minnesota, and he said that after a penalty that he got, it was a 15-yard penalty, he asked the official what he could have done differently, and the official said, you did everything right. You couldn't have done anything different. They just want us to throw the flag.
Wow. How's that going to go over? Man, that is just bad.
Yeah.
I just don't get it. Because, again, what you can see is that it's so tough right now to be a defensive player. I guess what the league is maybe thinking in the back of their mind, even though, again, they probably wouldn't confirm this, they're liking how scoring has spiked. Because now there is an increase in scoring, which I think that they like. But in the end, is that going to be good enough? And, again, it's taking away the defensive players and what they're going to be able to do. I don't think that's necessarily a good thing.
No, I don't think so either. I think everybody just wants to watch a good, fair game. And if you're going to literally tell a player you're just throwing a flag because the league wants you to throw a flag, that's ridiculous.
Yeah, that's not going to go
over. I like defensive battles, too. I guess they don't think that the general public does. But sometimes those are great games.
Yeah. I mean, what did you think of last night's game?
I thought it was awesome. I mean, I never thought that I would be that invested in a Browns-Jets game. I do have to say that I think part of it is just because you just have to kind of root for the Browns. It's like they're just, you feel so bad for the fans. I know you don't necessarily root for them.
No, but I mean, it's funny. When I told it to Mike Salk today, he didn't believe me that I said that I thought they were going to win last night. And he kept on saying, no, you didn't. It's like, yeah, it's like, go back to the tape. It's like, I know that even Jim Moore was surprised about that. But what I looked at, and I think looked at correctly, was that, okay, here's a rookie quarterback, a one that I think is very good. I thought was the best quarterback. But Sam Darnold's in his third game in 11 days. There's no way he's going to succeed. And that's what ended up happening. He had a bad game. So you put that in there. Then I thought the Browns played like the Browns because it was a horrible game for Tyrod Taylor. I mean, because he just didn't get anything generated. I mean, that was bad. But then you come back and you look and you say, all right, so now here comes Baker Mayfield. And honestly, that had to be one of the more exciting performances you can have. He did quite well.
Oh, yeah. I think maybe people are taking it a little far because it is a small sample. And, you know, people thought that Sam Darnold looked incredible after his first game, too. But it was a huge difference from what Tyrod Taylor was doing out there to the, you know, spark that Baker Mayfield gave them when he came in. And he stood strong in the pocket. He completed some tough passes that needed to be really accurate. And it was impressive also. I don't know if you noticed, Professor, but their other rookie, Denzel Ward.
Mm-hmm. Oh, he was great.
Playing amazing. 3 games, 3 takeaways already.
No, he's doing the good stuff. I mean, that team is getting a lot of takeaways. That's why I thought they'd win against Darnold, because they would get the takeaways. They got Greg Williams as a defensive coordinator, and I like him a lot. I mean, you know, he'll make the good plays and do the good things. And so that put them in a position where it's like, okay, here you go. Go get the excitement going, and they did. And then Baker Mayfield. Now the question is going to be, you know, and this is where I think the danger of this is. Okay, because they basically have no film on the guy. He comes in, and, you know, they couldn't control him, and he was able to execute things. But now, I mean, you get some game tape and all that. I mean, he's not going to be as effective, I think, if you put him in there. So if Taylor is healthy, and that's a big if, because that's 3 concussions in 12 games or something like that, then I think you have to probably go with Mayfield. The fans are going to want to go with Mayfield. So we'll see how that goes. Back to the injury front, looks like bad news for the Philadelphia Eagles. You know, they now have lost their top 2 running backs. Jay Ajayi has a back injury. He's been ruled out. Darren Sproles has a hamstring injury. He's been ruled out. Oh, that makes it pretty tough for them, because, you know, they that's a very tough game that they have coming up right now. So that's not necessarily good. You know, the Eagles right now without their top 2 running backs, 4 other guys questionable. They have Alshon Jeffries with a shoulder injury is questionable. He's not going to be able to play either. Hey, you can check out the show in the 710 Sports app. It's driven by your Puget Sound Acura dealer. All right, well, coming up next, let's get a preview of what's going on with the Dallas Cowboys. Todd Archer from ESPN.com joins us. It's the John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.